This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. With me is our history doctor, Bill Smith. Welcome back.
Good to be here.
I want to talk to you today about the attack on the American ambassador and the consulate in Benghazi, Libya. We've had investigations, blue ribbon panels, and Bill, I want you to help us now sort through the news from Benghazi, and let's add some historic perspective.
Not to diminish the questions that have been raised, but this is not unique in our history. We can say the frequency of these attacks on diplomats and American interests abroad perhaps have increased during the latter 20th and now 21st century as the United States becomes a global power, but unfortunately, we've been here before.
There has been talk of conspiracy and cover-up, the effort to make some political gains in parsing who or what is actually responsible for that attack in Benghazi.
Well, and to quote the former Secretary of State, what difference does it make with four Americans dead? The answers are right in front of us. Ultimately, the president is responsible, and in regard to diplomatic missions, the Secretary of State.
That doesn't necessarily satisfy many of the people who are creating the investigations, though.
No, and it shouldn't.
Well, so it seems that you agree with some of the points made by Darrell Issa and the whistleblowers?
Well, actually, I see them continuing the timeless political party battle of our American system.
Well, you can't have it both ways. Or are you about to give me some political facts, some history to prove this?
Well, the history in Americans' foreign policy tragedies reveals several through lines that are politically agnostic. It doesn't matter if it was the elephant or the donkey who was in charge, especially the bull moose.
Okay, elephant, donkey. Republicans, Democrats, bull moose would be Teddy Roosevelt?
Yes. With Theodore Roosevelt's administration, we see the beginning of a more globally aggressive foreign policy and one directed by the chief executive. It was Teddy who famously admitted after his presidency, quote, "I took the canal zone and let Congress debate. And while the debate goes on, the canal does also." The more the United States has a need for resources, markets, and power to enforce its will, the more we will run into opposition around the world.
And that gets us to Benghazi?
And Khobar Towers, and Lebanon, and Tehran, and the Mayaguez.
So this becomes an unfortunate byproduct of inevitable conflict between American interests and interests of other nations?
Yes, and to that extent, as the world continues to have conflicting global powers, this will be a part of our present and then our history. Let's not forget a critical issue that led to the foundation of this nation. It was Great Britain's need to deal with paying for and policing a frontier clash, the French and Indian War, that escalated from there. The mid-1700s aren't exactly a time frame that people consider global economies, but how could we think that we were going to retreat from the world today when we were founded in such a set of circumstances in the colonial era?
So what else would you say is consistent in this recent series of events?
Well, the foreign part of it is straightforward. American interest versus foreign interest. The domestic part should maybe concern more people.
The political infighting? That might distract us from the larger questions?
Well, actually, no. The truly bothersome consistency is that active campaigns of deception, cover-up, and misdirection carried on against the American public by the executive branch.
What now? Say what?
The one thing that we can say today with full assurance of truth is that the outside of the inner sanctum of the executive branch didn't really know what happened. And we won't know for years, perhaps decades to come, of what really happened. Let me reach back to a couple of foreign policy events that were either covered up or downplayed in the moment to explain where I'm going with this. Not unlike the current situation, the first has an Arkansas tie through J. William Fulbright.
The Gulf of Tonkin?
Precisely. The attack on American naval forces by the North Vietnamese Navy became justification for the expansion of military operations in Southeast Asia under President Lyndon Johnson. He asked his former Senate colleague, J. William Fulbright, to shepherd the resolution authorizing the president to use increased force in Vietnam through the Congress. Within a few years, it was revealed that what had been portrayed to be was not quite what it was. Yet even in the late 1960s, when what we today would call whistleblowers stepped forward to blow holes in the official government version of events, military and executive branches steadfastly denied that anything had gone wrong. Today, we know those events were the classic fog of war misadventures that then were used for political purpose.
And then you had Fulbright, former Senate colleague, fellow Democrat of the president, becoming a key opponent to Johnson's policies.
True. When his staff received the first reports that they were misled, Fulbright quickly became a staunch opponent of the war and the resolution.
All right, you said you had another.
Well, this was the bombing of the international sector of Shanghai, China, later the sinking of four U.S. ships in the Yangtze River near Nanking in 1937 by elements of the Imperial Japanese Navy. The most famous of these, the USS Panay, that's a United States naval ship, which was anchored at the besieged city. The Japanese sank the Panay and three U.S. oil tankers owned by Standard Oil. In attempting to avoid a Remember the Maine event that would push the United States perhaps into war, or at least into greater involvement in the conflict that was existing between China and Japan.
A no-win situation at that point.
Absolutely. Franklin D. Roosevelt's State Department accepted the imperial government's explanation of an accidental bombing of the ships and the diplomats. Later investigations revealed that the U.S. Navy at the time had evidence of the targeting of the Panay. It was clearly marked with American flags and a large flag on deck, so any aircraft diving in to bomb would have easily been able to avoid that that was an American ship. And Japanese sources would confirm the deliberate targeting of foreigners as a way to remove them as political allies for the Chinese.
So we can see a rather grim trend here.
This isn't a lighthearted subject. But regardless of president or time period, there is an unfortunate but reasonably consistent trend of deception, cast as well-meaning or attempting to avoid further conflict, about the circumstances these events cause when we look at them in real time. One thing we can see as a change with a more interconnected society, those who seek to reveal the details left out by the original counts have a more robust means for getting the word out.
So until, as Jack Nicholson reminds us, we can't handle the truth,
we're history.